Right. What a great privilege to follow Roger. I think it's just been absolutely superb because he's covered the whole of the spiritual background to old age and so on. And I just feel it a great honour to be sitting at his feet, so to speak, this morning. My name, Peter Dyack, age 70. I live in Linfield. I was converted in 1970 in All Saints Parish Church. I've been there ever since. In 1988, summoned to a NEAC conference, a National Evangelical Anglican Conference in Caister, the Lord seemed to speak to me about the elderly. I was in work. I was an area manager for an organization of shoes called Millwoods. Some of you will have heard of that. I was happily engaged in that role as area manager. But when I sat in this workshop for 4 days, Clive Calver was in charge of it. Some of you will remember Clive. At the end of it, he said, "Lord, I want you to ask the Lord what he wants you to do." And I just sensed that the Lord was saying to me, "Go back and engage with the elderly." And that came back as a surprise. I came back and I met one or two others in Linfield. There are three churches, URC, Evangelical Free, and ourselves. And I found that for 10 years, an idea had been floating around for a residential home for the elderly from the three churches. So the truth is, in a very short space of time, well, 4.5 years it actually took, we pulled together a committee, a charity, and we eventually bought an existing nursing home, Compton House, and we put our hearts to it. But just before we actually completed the negotiations, I came home one day to my wife and I said, "I would just love to be involved in that. I wonder if we could test that." And we went back to the committee and just threw the idea open to them. And they accepted, praise God, the fact that Jennifer and I could house manage Compton House. Now, we had no experience whatsoever, nothing. I didn't like elderly people either. I had a mother who was fast growing, difficult in growing old, and I wasn't looking forward to it. But it was all of God, nothing of us, but all of God. And for 4.5 years, we wrestled with the Lord in prayer, in seeking financial help, and so on and so forth. But we were able to buy this home with 23 residents and 74 staff, I think it is. And we took it over lock, stock, and barrel. And we began. Well, that home is still running today very, very effectively as Compton House. This is the little story that we did of it. Unfortunately, if you want a copy of it and you have in mind to do that, then please come to me and I'll try and find a copy to send to you. But it's still going today. We found that there was a sheltered accommodation unit next door in Abbeyfield. They ran out of steam and they said, "Would you like to take on the management of it?" And we said, "Yes, we'll do that. We'll pay your loans. You hand us the building." And so we linked the two together, and we now have a residential nursing home with 25 people, with about 75 staff, and we have the sheltered accommodation, which can accommodate 10 next door to it. Now, Jennifer and I retired after 8.5 years of running Compton House, not on the nursing side, you'll gather, just on the practical administrative side. We retired in April 81. What am I talking about? 2001. April 2001. I had just turned 60, and it seemed right to hand over at that point in time. But when I retired, I realized that I couldn't be idle. I just could not be idle. And so I turned to Jennifer and I said, "I'd love to give 3 days a week, free of charge, to the church family to actually build up some of the things we had tried experimentally in Compton House." That was tremendous because God was with us in a very powerful way. I was given freedom unbelievable. I was given freedom to build the pattern of spiritual help for all the people in that home. And so we developed a Sunday service every Sunday, still going. We developed a bedside service when a person dies, which is quite unique and has been hugely appreciated, and a variety of other things, alpha courses and so on and so forth with the staff and so on. And I felt that there were many things there. In Linfield, we've got six homes. Three have closed. That would have made it nine originally. We've still got, in addition, three sheltered homes. So we have a disproportionate amount of residential care. 130 people reside in the homes as of today. So it gives you the idea of the proliferation of people, really elderly people, people in care in residential homes. And I felt that for many of those homes, I didn't know, but I felt the thing to do was to get out and to engage with them, engage with the management, and sow the seed and ask the question, would you welcome us in? And to my great joy, I did not meet opposition anywhere. And so I had freedom to move, which again was a huge privilege. And I won't engage in the detail of this because I have provided for you my handouts. They come in this book. There are four yellow handouts, and they cover subjects like getting started with senior alpha in a residential home, in sheltered accommodation, church lunch club setting as well, and then follow-up to senior alpha. But in there it gives you the detail, the minutiae of what you might need to know how to begin that work. But it was just tremendous to be able to make a start in these homes. And when Senior Alpha came out in 2005 in that format, which is a large print version for elderly people, it was just a wonderful opportunity to take it up and try it. And I'm now a senior alpha advisor for Mid-Sussex. It was just great to be able to offer this to the homes. And this has been a regular pattern, sometimes twice a year, sometimes once a year. Last year we had, in three homes, we were running the course concurrently. We had five, I think, give their lives to Christ in one, 14 in another, and three in another. And that's been a huge encouragement. People at the end of their lives, some believed not even dying before they'd finished the course, which is quite a, you know, quite a solemn thought, isn't it? That people, you don't realise it, but they're actually in passage, and they themselves don't realise it. They got through a couple of the sessions, but died in the process. We didn't kill them. That's really where I'm starting from. So my role today, and I will have done it for 9 years now, it'll be 10 years in September, my role has been to develop a spiritual program for every one of those homes. And therefore, in all of the homes except for one, which is a sheltered accommodation, a little more difficult to deal with, they have at least two monthly services, and I will visit and do one of those services myself. I also have developed, using the resources of the three churches in Linfield, I have a team of 40 people who help me. Those people will go out and they'll attend one home, they'll take a service, somebody else will play the piano, somebody else will do some visiting or something like this. So it's now tremendous that we can actually have this group. And in fact, in Compton House, which, as I say, is my old home, we generally get 20 to 24 every time we meet together. We meet on a Sunday, as I say, and once a month I do a communion service. But then also, during the week, we have a songs of praise, half an hour's hymn singing, their choices, and then I speak for about 10 minutes after that. And we generally get between 20 and 24 come to that. And they come from both houses, in other words, from Compton House and Little Compton, the house next door. And, you know, they're pretty much committed to us in the true sense of the word. You notice a difference, like we have done recently. We've lost about three or four people who were wheelchair bound, and it's a great loss because two of them particularly were brilliant, fabulous Christian people in their 80s and 90s. But the consolation is that very often I get myself asked to do their funeral. And so the one that died last week before last, Peggy, I took her funeral at Worth on Friday of last week. So it's a massive privilege to be able to follow people through, to love them. She had been with us 3 years, to love them and to nurture them and to bless them throughout the last years of their lives, and then to minister to them in death and to engage with the family. So that's what I'm involved in today. I do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays every week, and it's an invaluable time. And as I say, I can call on these other 40 or so people to come and help me as well. Now, just want to tell you basically, because I know that time is very short, I want to tell you basically the sort of things that you might find helpful if you are really serious about engaging in this work. I think you really need a calling from God in the true sense of the word. Dealing with the elderly is not easy. Most of us will recognize that. And it is the most neglected area, sorry David, to be speaking to indirectly to you as a pastor, but it is absolutely true. It is the most neglected part of our church's life. Make no bones about it. There is a feeling abroad that when you retire, retire from the church, that is, either through ill health or for whatever reason, immobility or whatever, you're fine. You see, you've been in the church for 40 years, haven't you? You know it all. Your battery is fully charged. And everybody thinks you'll manage perfectly well. I want to sound a warning here. Those who engage in old age, it is the toughest time of your spiritual life. Will you hear that? It is the toughest time of your spiritual life. You are going to need all of the help you can get, both from God and from those around you. I really seriously mean that. Today you're fine. Tomorrow you begin the first signs of dementia. Today you're grand. Tomorrow suddenly you get a wobble and you move into a stroke and you've lost your speech. And you know, one has no conception about how this is going to affect me individually. But I've learnt so much from engaging with others. And can I share with you some of the people who are most affected adversely are Christians. I really, really mean that. Beware. Beware. I have met some fabulous Christian people face to face, hand on hand, week after week, watch them develop and so on. And I've been heartbroken to see how some of those people have been deeply affected by their circumstances. Faith seems to disappear. All their problems just seem to become more and more intolerable. And we develop a pattern. I'm only a layman, so I'm not speaking, fancy language. I'm just telling you as it comes. But we develop a pattern of grumpy old men and women. And don't forget that old age is what? Second childhood. So if you were a selfish little boy as a youngster, the chances are that that selfish trait might well emerge in older age. And I want to sound that note because I think that's the thing that is most difficult to try and get people to really understand. Old age is the greatest. It can either be the toughest spiritual experience you will ever have, or it can be the greatest. And I have met people who have been absolutely fabulous at 102. How about baptizing somebody at 102 and a half? I've done it. I've been involved in it, I should say, at Compton House. 102 and a half. How about a man who comes in on a Monday into one of the homes and by Tuesday he happens to stumble in on a senior alpha course? By the end of Tuesday morning, this man is a complete stranger. By the end of Tuesday morning, he's given his life to Christ. The next thing he wants is to be baptized, doesn't he? In the home, amongst his friends, with a salad bowl and water. You know, this happens. It actually happens. I've seen it happen. I've seen another woman in a wheelchair, so badly treated in her young life. She lived in Chailey Heritage for years. And she was in a sheltered home, and she suddenly, I went and did a senior alpha course. She said, "Yes, I'm interested. I want to put my faith and trust in Jesus, but I cannot go into a church building. Something drives me out." And so I went back to James, our vicar, and I said, "Can we deal with this?" And we brought her in, we wheeled her into this church, literally with her trembling as she came in, and we prayed for her, and that was dispersed completely. So I have to testify that if you're over 90, there's a good chance you are eligible to come to faith and trust in Jesus Christ. Okay? We think about old age with great deference, Roger. Forgive me if I'm treading on toes here. We think about sort of 70 plus. I'm talking about 90 plus. I'm talking about that sort of extension of life. And who knows, before very long, it's going to be 110, isn't it? And maybe even more. Anyway, I just get carried away a bit. Right, so what do we do? Well, as I say, that's invaluable. And I've found Senior Alpha absolutely invaluable. You can use the DVD, you can do a live performance, you can trim the... nowadays you can get the transcripts off the internet and you can prune them back and so on. And it's, I find personally, it's the best way. You can't do a Holy Spirit weekend, so you've got to have a session, a 15-session course. Okay? When we go beyond that, we need extra information. And on the net, we've got this wonderful thing, the Harmony of the Gospels, focusing on the life of Jesus Christ alone. 250 sessions. One of the problems we often have is, where do I start? What do I do? What do I use? Concentrate on the life of Christ alone is the thing that I'm finding more than ever before is the important thing. I found this was something helpful. You'll find that when you go into homes nowadays, large print hymn books are impossible to get a hold of, apart from Torch Trust, at £5 per item. So we publish this in our own church. We've taken 100 best hymns and we put it in this format. And every single home has an adequate supply of those large print hymn books that we've done. And it's cost us virtually nothing. Now, when it comes to the mechanics of beginning, first of all, I think you ought to find one of those. This is the West Sussex Care Guide, available in your library, free of charge. Okay, superb publication, and it gives a complete list of all the homes there are. If you haven't got a home in mind in your area, but you'd love to become involved, get a hold of this, and then you can pick and choose what's in your area, what sort of a home it is, how many people there are, who's in charge of it, who owns it, etc., etc. That's free of charge. It's a starting point. All right? Yeah, I believe there is. Anyway, investigate hard. All right? Now, if you want a breakdown of the makeup of the population where you live, nothing better than the Office of National Statistics printout, which I found really helpful. You know, I was looking for confirmation about the number of elderly people in Linfield. And of course, something like this very quickly shows you exactly the breakdown of the people there. And of course, what have we just had? We've just had a census, haven't we? So within a short period of time, we shall have a really up-to-date one of those. The third thing that you need to know is this. The last Labour government did one good thing that I can remember particularly, and it was this. They recognised that within care homes there were all sorts of terrible things that were going on. And they brought in a thing called the Care Standards Act, which is, was it Care Quantity Control. Now, it is now a fact that every single home in this country is obliged by law to provide a spiritual program for every one of their residents. Did you know that? Practically everybody I've spoken to has said, no, they didn't know it. But it's true, and it's been revised. It was revised in 2002, and it's one of these things that will be continually revised. And what it does is it actually gives us chapter and verse as to what we can do. Daily life and social activities, just taken at random. Other people will search, this is talking about searching for a home. Other people will search for a home which accommodates people with similar cultural, religious, professional and recreational interests. Individual food preferences, both personal and cultural, religious, are all part of their individual identity and must always be observed. And this is just laced with standards. Standard three, there we are. Social. When you talk about your aunt, your uncle, whoever it might be, their social interests, hobbies, religious and cultural needs must be respected and reported on. We have such support in many ways through that now than we did before. How many people in the past have said, I went to this home and the door was shut in my face? How many of you have been into a home or tried to take the gospel into some outside unit and the people have said, no thanks? Anybody? Yes? Right. Well, I know that a lot of people have, and more so now than ever before. There's another source of beneficial help, the Sheffield Centre. You know the Sheffield Centre very well, don't you? Their publications. Right. Now, in addition, I'm not, as I say, I'm just talking about how I do it, okay? So I'm just sharing with you, because otherwise David will be leaping on me in a moment. How many minutes?
A couple of minutes,
okay. Right. In conclusion then, what have we got available to us to set the ball rolling? If the Holy Spirit is behind us and he says, yes, there's work to be done, and there are 200 elderly people in Maresfield or wherever it might be, what are we going to do about it? That's the problem, isn't it? It's to getting over the inertia. Sounds good, doesn't it? Sounds great. Till we ask ourselves the question, how can we do it? Right. On our doorstep, PASH, an organisation in Eastbourne, have built up a pattern in Eastbourne where most churches have got at least one residential home. And they've provided these 50 services of Christian worship, 50 Bible studies for care homes. The simplest item, 10 minutes at the most, just a short Bible passage, and helpful hints as to how to do it. Okay?
Will they produce one?
By PASH. If anybody wants the details, come to me afterwards, all right?
How do you spell it?
PARCHE. They figure on the internet, of course. This is a brilliant thing that's just come out of Scripture Union. Look at that. Words of peace, words of hope, words of faith. A 10-minute unit, all packed in together. And what happens at the back is also a DVD with songs that match each of the sections. 31 items per book. Fabulous. I've started using it with great blessing. This one here, Words of Hope, running through the life of Jesus. has been absolutely marvellous. Absolutely marvellous. And it's a great way to start. Where most of us are inadequate in sharing, particularly in an environment like that. And so something like that is a tremendous help. And I've not felt ashamed about using them. I've talked with James, our vicar, and said, you know, I'm not doing anything original, you know. And it's abundantly clear that that's not needed. Why not use somebody else's? We've had Roger here today. We've got the best of the best. And we're listening to what he has to say to us. And so we need to learn from that. And then Outlook Trust, if you've heard of the Outlook Trust, another organization built for ministry, biblical outreach ministry to elderly people. This is a wonderful new little booklet that's just come out by a man called Mark Ashton, who wrote about facing death recently, and he died literally after writing the book. He was at the Round Church in Cambridge. Right. Now, and then, as I say, you've got the facility. Isn't it amazing? Alpha Course, normally £99. They've just dropped the price to 50 for the DVDs. Express ones, the short ones and the long ones. That's now available at half price. And this is something else I'm struggling to get time to tell you about. On an outreach basis, we've just started running, and this is the third year we're doing it. Holiday at Home, a three-day event in our church buildings. The middle day is an outing. This time we're going down to Pagham. We're taking a coachload of people down to Pagham. We're treating them to a lunch and so on. But that's also an immense way of reaching out. And this is to the unreached. These are the people that have no church connections whatsoever. We found this absolutely marvellous. Each year now we've had about 40 people come, and some of them are starting to come to church as well. So Holiday at Home, Outlook Trust have got that. And lastly, perhaps just to round up, I thought I'd just show you, isn't this amazing what people can do? This is a lady in one sheltered accommodation at the moment. Her name is Diana Sykes, and she has written two books of poetry that I tell you would make Shakespeare blanch. The language is so beautiful, and she's published these herself. She always makes sure that she gives me a copy when I go in and see her. It's just fantastic. And here she is, you know, clocking round. She's really struggling in life, but she's been able to put her head together. The other little thing she's done is she took one man who had a stroke at 60 and who's been completely disabled, can't speak a word, and she's now actually got him talking. Just on an aside, you might say. Here's another man that excites me, Jim Parker, a former veteran. And he decided that he had quite an exciting little story to write. So he sat down on his big-eyed computer and he wrote it. And what's her name? Dame Vera Lynn. She's acknowledged it and blessed it in every sense of the word as far as publicity and so on is concerned. And dear old Jim is only about, I think he's only about 90-something. And yet he's done that. And then a couple of Christmases ago, there was an opportunity given to some of the residents in one of the homes to design Christmas cards, which were used by the home management, which they sent out. And, you know, I find that really, really incredible to realise what latent talents lie beneath the surface. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? And, you know, I think what my wish would be is, Lord God, have mercy on me. Grant me the opportunity to be as effective as they are at their age. 90 plus years of age. Don't let me just rusticate in some home. I'm going to call a halt there.
Yeah, excellent. And I shall hand over to Roger to supplement that, and then we'll have some questions.
I'm not going to say very much. Just to follow up on the whole issue of old age being the most critical time. If you take Jeremiah 12, verse 5, it's what I call the Jeremiah 12, verse 5 principle. The concept is that the whole of our life is preparing us to be old. And old age is being called the final battle. It's what it is. It's when God's grace is most proved, but it's also when life is most difficult. So Jeremiah 12, verse 5 is a good verse to go. All I want to say really is, I won't go in the areas where Peter's been talking, because, he's covered it very well, and I would only repeat what he's been saying and probably spend a lot more time on it than he did. Just a couple of things that I just want just to highlight. I think, first of all, within our churches, one of the things we have to try and do with our older people is to begin to motivate them to do things. I talked about how the culture has influenced people. I think we have to try and create opportunities. Can I just suggest four or five ways that you can create opportunities for older people to start to function? I don't know how you construct your services, but maybe on a Sunday morning or Sunday evening, maybe once a month, take an older person and give them 5 minutes, or even interview them for 5 minutes, to tell their story of the sufficiency of God in their lives. You would just be amazed at the stories that you hear. Things they've never told anybody because they didn't think anybody was interested. So I think it's this issue of breaking down barriers. Another big area is to encourage people that it's quite legitimate to talk about spiritual things. We actually don't do it very well. We don't do it in our Christian culture. But if older people are going to minister to others, they have to learn that actually it's the right thing to do, to talk about the Lord. I know one old lady who has developed a wonderful ministry. Her ministry is that she has a list of about 30 older people. She calls them older. She's 96. Most of those are only in their 80s. But, you know, they're older people. And what she does is she rings four of them a day. And she talks to them about what the Lord said to her in her quiet time. They can't wait for their turn to come round when she rings them. Because somebody just said to her, why don't you share what you get with others? So she does, on the telephone. Why on the telephone? Because she's bedbound. But she's got a ministry because somebody empowered her. You will find if you've got the notes of the issue, one of the things I didn't get to was the whole issue of empowering older people in our congregation. I think there's a lot to be done there. Moving on just very briefly, outreach. There are vast numbers of older people out there. Encourage those people in your church who are moving on into their 70s and 80s but still able to realize that it's legitimate as a Christian to join the local bowls club or the art group and to share with people, you know, as you commiserate a defeat at a game of bowls, you can talk about the Lord who's undefeated. And those sort of things. And encourage people to do that. And then again, it may be old hat, but it's very valuable. The whole area of specific activities focused on older people. We all know about lunch clubs, day centres, very important. One issue, if you do go down that road and you've not gone down that road, you want advice, get in touch with me or get in touch with Pilgrim Homes. But if you get in touch with me, there are a few very practical things like availability of loos and that sort of thing that you need to do because of health and safety. But they're not major and you can get over those. But just need to think in those terms. But thinking other areas as well. There are a lot of intelligent older people who think they're above day centres and lunch clubs. My daughter-in-law started a reading group. They read secular books. They read biographies. She started it for young wives because she's a youngish wife. She's got some older people coming. So now she's looking at an older people's reading group. Read a chapter a week, then talk about it. The opportunities for the gospel are just immense. Once you get people doing those sorts of things, there are just so many areas where you can go doing things like that. So I think the issue is that the field is wide open. You just need imagination. And there are no barriers. Lady I know discovered three, she was in her 70s, she discovered three elderly people in her street who were isolated, were lonely. You know, many older people are very lonely living in the community. They may not be fortunate enough to be in residential home or sheltered housing. Government policy is increasingly to keep people in their homes, and consequently people are increasingly isolated and lonely. So either by visiting schemes or whatever, you can get to know them. She found three people in her street who were not housebound, but had no friends, weren't going very far. So she decided to bring them all to her house to give them lunch once a week, which is now what she does. She goes to their houses, wheels one of them up, brings them to her home, puts on a little lunch. Now she does it in their homes because they now want to be involved in getting the lunch. But again, she's now talking to them about the Lord and moving them on spiritually and helping them. And it's just that she had an idea and gave it a go. And I just want to encourage you to be imaginative and positive, and to get your people to be imaginative and positive. So many older people, so many people in their 70s say, there's nothing for me to do. So the thing to do is to say, well, have you thought about? Then give them a whole list of things to do. And let them choose and let them find their niche. And what you find is that, as we've heard, so many older people have so many gifts. There are lots and lots of examples of older people who write books, write poetry, tell their stories. One of the things that I found very useful when I was working for Age Concern was to get young people involved with older people on oral histories. So you send some of your young people from your... I did this in the church. Send some of your young people to visit an older person, to get them to tell their story of what life was like in the war. What was it like being a Christian during the war? And they came back with a recording of it. You had a lovely oral history, but you also built a relationship between two generations that actually became very beneficial in so many other ways. So it's just about imagination. The sky is the limit. And I hope you've got a bit of inspiration today to go and do what is useful in your area. Every area will be different. Every local authority will be different. You won't get that information in Leicestershire that you were shown earlier on today. It's not a produced act in that form at all. Different local authority, different mentality. But the opportunities are there, so let me encourage you.
Great stuff. Well, thank you. Does anyone have any questions for either Peter or Roger? Or it'd be good if you've got things that you've been doing in your church that have been going well, and it'd be good to share that. I'm going to start with Paul, because he told me something on the way out that they've just done this week. And why don't you share that with us, Paul, and then someone else can be thinking of a question.
Well, thank you. We've for about 13 or 14 years now at Turner's Hill, we've been taking our senior sits group down on a holiday to Eastbourne. After the first one, which wasn't ideal, it was good but it wasn't ideal. We then went to the Imperial Hotel, had a recce there, and approached them. We wanted to have devotions in the morning, and we've been going there, and we've been so grateful to God. We've usually take about 25-35 in number, and we've been able to take non-Christians as well. They love it. They get to know us. We laugh with them. We listen to them. We pray with them, and it's lovely. It's a privilege. They look forward to it. Many are alone for long stretches, and they talk about it. It's a real opportunity, a bridge-building exercise for the Lord Jesus to walk into their lives and to give the light of the gospel and hope to them, and friendships as well. So that's one little area.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul. Anyone else?
Yes, just wanted to ask a question. You mentioned bedside service. Is that something for the family to be involved in, or is that... If you could just expand on that a bit, please.
You've known them as an individual, you've loved them, and very often the staff have a huge attachment to them as well. And one of the things we discovered no sooner than a month after we opened Compton House, somebody died in a large room of five at the time. We don't have rooms that size now, thank God. But I felt that it was important that we were distinctly different. We were a Christian nursing home. And instead of just doing the normal routine, we delayed calling the undertakers. We laid the person out in the bed, or the nurse did, gathered and just well to that. And we invited the staff and not come and join. So that's the church format is to it's be.
Yeah, when we worked in Bristol, my wife and I ran a residential unit. It was part of the society that I ran, where we had 45 elderly blind people. One of the things that we did, certainly with Christian people, and that in fact Pilgrim Homes try to do in their homes, is when people are actually dying, to organise, maybe for a few hours before people die, a rota of volunteers and staff who read the scriptures. For instance, one particular funeral that I took recently, the staff have been able to not only read the scriptures, but at the moment of death, several Christian staff and other people who were in the home joined in, and they were singing Amazing Grace as this person died, which the family just were just overwhelmed by the love and the care. And it's a phenomenal witness. And I think the care of the dying is one of the neglected areas of ministry in our churches. It's a big subject, but it's one we need to think about. And I think, you know, what's being described is something that is so valuable. And it's not mystical, it's spiritual, and it witnesses to non-Christian staff, it witnesses to non-Christian members of the family. And what happens is the family talk about it to other people. When I took the funeral of this man who died, where he'd been helped in that way, non-Christian members of the family were coming up to me and saying, that care was wonderful. Why did the staff do it? And the opportunities for the gospel were just multiplied because there was that care of somebody in their last hours. And I think it's so important, you know.
It really does make an impact. A number of our members have had relatives in Compton House and died, and again, bear witness to the helpfulness of that. And indeed, the impact of a Christian care home that isn't only for Christians is massive. I mean, Compton House has a phenomenal reputation in Mid-Sussex as being a very different care home, and that does speak volumes. So I have a question up here. So Mike is coming along. Yeah.
There was reference then to the dying and death, but of course there are the younger families, children, grandchildren and so on. Somebody I knew, she is now dead, used to, quote, train people about death. She lived at Burling over by Snodland and had married at the start of the war one of the Neville family, you know, big and rich. A thumping great crypt in the church filled with her husband and his ancestors. And she would take people down there and teach in the crypt, including children and very large numbers of people in the village. Really learned from Maureen as she taught that. I think there's an important scope in our churches for not just thinking as we thought today, but thinking right through the church about getting old and dying.
Is Can we just send it right across?
Thank you. Peter, can you tell us a little bit more about what has been done in Holiday at Home, as well as taking people out for the day? Because I find in the village, it's people are still talking months later about what they did at Holiday at Home. When I go to the market and things like that, it's a subject that comes up from non-Christians.
That, first of all, chimes in hugely with elderly people because they come from a generation of generosity and warmth and so on, paying your way. So the first thing is you actually put a basket down and people, because they ask you to, and you find you've probably got more in it than if you had charged at full rate, because people are generous. That's the first thing. Then we set about a program that starts with coffee at 11, and about 11:15 we have usually either a speaker or somebody who talks about something of old age or something like this, but usually with a theme. It's entertainment, or we have a choir sing, or a group like that comes. Sometimes we also have within the congregation a first-class conjurer, and he comes and does that. That encourages people. Or we've done sections where you can choose what activity you'd like to do, playing games, bar billiards or whatever, flower arranging and so on and so forth. But there's a variety of things on the Tuesday. Fish and chip lunch brought in. Fish and chip shops are excellent in doing this for you, and it saves all the aggro of doing it yourself. And then in the afternoon we would do something similar, probably more like a pub quiz, something like that. And we finish normally about 4 o'clock with, again, a sumptuous tea. So people go home, they've had morning coffee and biscuits, they've had a cooked lunch, albeit fish and chips, and in the afternoon they've had a full cream tea as well. And so they leave us about 4 o'clock. The Wednesday, as I say, is an outing this year, the biggest one we've done. We're taking a coach down to Pagham to a hotel run by one of our committee members' family. And they're going to provide a lunch, and we're going to have the freedom of the grounds, and we can walk around Pagham and so on and bring them back by coach. The Thursday, again, is a similar day to the Tuesday, and that's with a variety of different things. Choirs, musicians come along and play, and so on and so forth. And we usually start planning that in February for August, in order that we can get coaches booked and artists booked as well.
How do you advertise it, Peter?
What we've done, we've assembled a list of elderly people through a road warden scheme, that sort of thing, some 4 years ago. And they're on our mailing list, so every time we're doing something, we send an invitation to them. And then we're always on the lookout for people mentioning names to us, and we add them to the list. So that's how we've built up the list of 60 people, I think, on the list, with usually about 40 come each time.
Who pays for it?
The church does. The church does. And it's one of the best things in the world to win confidence. Never charge. Never charge. God will honour that. This is what we found every single time. Never charge. Never charge for the lunch. Never charge for the... Well, we have to for the outing. That is the one exception we have to do. But otherwise, never charge the use of premises or anything like this. And that has been an absolute...
Yeah, all I would add is that you don't have to just be in a village to do that. My son in Ipswich has done it in his church, and in fact they did it for 5 days. I told them they were mad, but they did it for 5 days and kept it going. I help a church in Nottingham that does it again for 5 days in August. And the church in Nottingham, in fact, will get up to nearly 100 people coming in. And I think just one of the things that I think is important to say is that then you can begin to bring the gospel to people. I mean, in the one in Nottingham and in Ipswich, what they did was that they made the talk the last thing each day, because they wanted people to go home with something to think about. 10-minute talk, just looking at aspects of old age and what the Bible has to say, the need of life, dealing with some of the issues of life, and being so effective. And certainly in my son's church, they now have at least half a dozen people coming regularly on the Lord's Day, because they first were introduced to the church through a holiday at home. And again, it influences the family, you know. And so, you know, and it begins to empower older people. When we've got time to end, I'll just tell you one story about three old ladies, but we'll save that for the end.
May I just share this with us, with you? Our church in Crowborough, on holiday at home, on the third day, in fact, we have an outing, probably Fish and Chips in Eastbourne. On the way back, we find a lovely country church with a WI group and hall. We have a service with hymns and a sermon, and then tea. And it has worked really well. Lots of non-Christians coming to know the Lord that through that way.
Thanks, Audrey. Donna.
I think that holidays at home are most successful when they are part of a regular program in which you're with the elderly people frequently during the year. The one thing that I want to say is an appeal. And that is an appeal that we treat elderly ministers. You mentioned Don Scott, made me think that these are the most neglected of our elderly people. For one reason or another, people find it a little difficult to visit the elderly minister unless the minister does it. And so my appeal is, everything that we've said today about needs, underline it. It applies to the elderly minister. Everything that we've said, underline it. It appeals to the elderly minister. I am the eldest person here today, I'm pretty certain, which means that I've known over the years so many ministers who have spent their days in retirement neglected. They're the most needful of our elderly people. I remember Herbert Lockyer. Some of you may have known his books. And I was with him almost to the end, alone, with a wife who was in severe dementia, nobody attending him or visiting him, nobody giving him an opportunity to exercise any kind of ministry, until I moved in and was able to be with him almost to the end of his days. So my appeal at the end, please look after your elderly retired ministers.
Yeah, I think that's very important. In fact, I spent all of Thursday afternoon before coming away Friday morning with an elderly minister. I mentioned his name. You would all know him. And he is so lonely and so, actually, so depressed because life has just lost all meaning. He can't preach anymore. Physically, he can't do it. Mentally, he can't concentrate enough. But nobody visits him. Even fellow ministers don't visit him because he's so well known. And, of course, he's so spiritually sound. And he's in such despair. And well, I'm in regular contact with about 8 or 9 at the moment, elderly ministers who are neglected by their local church, let alone other people. And I've spoken to one minister and I said, you've got so-and-so in your congregation. Why don't you visit him? He doesn't need a visit. He's been ministering all his life. He knows exactly how to deal with his issues. No, he doesn't. He's an old person who has great spiritual needs. So, yeah, don't forget your elderly minister. Can I just tell you now my story of my three old ladies? A young man went to a church, a little village church. He had 20 people in the congregation. He was the youngest by at least 30 years. His youngest member of the congregation was just under 70. And he thought, what can I do with this congregation? It was a real problem. So he preached on evangelism. And three ladies in their 80s got convicted because they said, we never witness. So somebody mentioned to me about the value of prayer triplets. They formed a prayer triplet. They met once a week to pray for opportunities to witness. And God convicted them about their unconverted daughters. So they started praying for their unconverted daughters. And they started talking to their daughters about the Lord, very gently, very graciously. And to their surprise, their daughter said, oh, we'll come to church. Within 6 months, the three daughters were converted. So they started bringing their children to the church. So suddenly the church, which had no Sunday school, found they needed a Sunday school. The daughters witnessed to their friends because the daughters got converted. Within 2.5 years, the number of people over 60 were well outnumbered by the people under 40. And the church was massively revived. And the young pastor said, now he doesn't know what to do with his time because he's got so many people to minister to. And it started with 3 80-year-olds who decided they ought to pray together and then start to witness. And God revolutionized the church. We just underestimate old people. And God doesn't. He uses them if we give them opportunity.